It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio set to join us here on the Wester Hotline. Hall of Fame game tomorrow. Chargers and Lions.
I found another stat on how inexperienced Trey Lance is.
Ready? All right.
He has 661 pass attempts in his life. High school, college, NFL preseason, NFL regular season. Joe Burrow attempted 652 passes last season.
There you go. Not a lot of experience for Trey Lance. The good news is he's playing in the Hall of Fame game, which is, of course, a very important exhibition performance. Do you remember what happened in last year's Hall of Fame game, gentlemen? Either of you?
The only thing I ever remember in a Hall of Fame game is the Titans running a fake punt on the Bills and scoring like a 50-yard touchdown on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I don't remember.
That happened. Last year's got rained out at the end. It's happened twice where they've just been like, you know what? It's fine. Let's all go home.
I remember a year because I had a fantasy draft that night, and we were like planning, like, oh, we'll have it on when we have our fantasy draft. And they canceled it because of the paint on the field?
The paint on the field was 2016.
Okay.
When they canceled the game because of field conditions.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's always a beautiful start to the NFL season. Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. I'm just looking over the both teams' rosters. Besides Trey Lance, there's some interesting names. DJ Uiagalelei, I think is how you say his name. I don't know. From Florida State, is also on the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
And Hendon Hooker. Kyle Allen, actually a member of the Lions now.
All right.
That's a backup quarterback battle there. Yeah, the Chargers are playing like Amarian Hampton's that's a fantasy name. Like, people are going to
starting
draft
running back
him
idea,
starting,
yeah.
He's the starting running back because Najee Harris has his eye injury. So there's some guys playing. I wouldn't expect the Lions to really have, like, Amon-Ra St. Brown in there or anything. But
yeah, we'll see. It's tomorrow night. It's football return to the Hall of Fame game. Sal joins us. All right, Sal, so we're still kind of in a waiting period for Maxwell Hairston. Take us through yesterday, the injury and the fallout from it, as we still do not have finality on what it actually is. We have a post from Hairston on Instagram. But take us through yesterday's practice, what the players' reactions were, and, you know, kind of where we stand.
So most of the media was watching on the big field because that's where Josh Allen was throwing to wide receivers. There were some position groups, mainly defensive backs and a couple others, working over on the side field, the small field. If you're familiar with St. John Fisher, there's two fields. One's more of a side, smaller field where, you know, there's not really a lot of fans or anything. So there weren't really any media over there. We were watching the quarterbacks and receivers. By the time the DBs came over to do one-on-ones, Max Hairston wasn't there. And then word started to filter, hey, Max Hairston was down on the side field. Now we're all thinking, okay, like, what happened? Where is he? What's going on? And then if you see online, I included in my story, WGR550.com, video from Carl Jones of Channel 4. But Dan Fates had video, John Scott had video. There's a bunch of video out there of Hairston on the ground being tended to trainers. No one saw him go down because, like I said, they were just working regular just position drills over on the side field. And if you're in one field, it happens on another, there's nothing you could do. But it's just ironic that none of us had seen actually what happened and him go down. But they caught video of him sitting on the ground, sitting, and Nate Bresky, the head athletic trainer of the Bills, was working on and looking and testing his right knee, it looked like. Max then kind of laid back. He was on his back. He put his hands up on his head as if, you know, he was upset, which isn't a good sign. Sat back up, and as he was getting up, he got up. His teammates were around him. They were, you know, giving him hugs and words of some sort of encouragement. And then he walked off the field with help, with assistance from Nate Bresky. The cart didn't come out, and he had assistance. You know, he didn't walk on his own power the entire way. I guess I'd say it that way. That being said, so we didn't really know what was going on. We're trying to, you know, see if we can have any updates. And we know in that situation, we're not going to get updates probably at least until later in the day. Didn't hear anything throughout yesterday, anything throughout last night. None of the national insiders had anything. I never personally saw a cart, but he could have been taken on a cart somewhere. Usually a lot of times they'll wheel you and take you on a cart into the locker room. Never saw anything after practice, so we waited. And then late last night, Max Hairston posts on, and then on, by the way, after practice, a couple teammates did talk, And they did say it was non-contact. That was the thing we were trying to figure out. Did he hit something? Hit a bag? Did he run into somebody? Remember when Matt Milano hurt his bicep last year? And he hit a bag, right? Remember he hit a trainer who was holding a bag. Like, you never know when things like that happen. This was not the case, according to his teammates. They said it was non-contact, and that's always obviously very concerning. Late last night, Max Harrison posted on Instagram, and I just want to make sure I got this right, exactly what he posted. He had a picture of him signing a football. He wrote, "Beyond blessed," with prayers, hands, and "Thank you, God." Now, that could mean that he got good results and he's, "Oh my, I'm blessed, thank you, God." It could also mean that he didn't get good results and he's putting his faith in God's hands. I don't want to read anything into these sorts of things because I think that can be very tricky to do, and I don't want to make any assumptions on that.
Right. All right, so the waiting game, yeah, it's about assumptions, and we're all trying to, you know, pull back memories of this or that, and the fact that it's quiet. Now, the Bills don't have a day. They didn't have practice today, Sal, so they have a day off. Do you think we might get an idea today, even though they don't practice? I mean, they had a walkthrough last night, right? So they would have had something, and here's the opportunity for whatever, his agent or him to tell somebody, an NFL insider. I feel like not knowing yet is actually good news. I mean, it's just a total guess because I feel like finality, we would find out. And if there's a window, you know, the little lighter injury, 4 to 6, then that's the kind of thing that they've got to give a more detailed explanation on. But that might be just me hoping.
Sure. I could look at it both ways, Jeremy. I've gone round and round in my own head about this, right? Which is, if there's something that we know that's not good, or somebody knows something that's not good, if it's, as you say, finality, if it's, oh my gosh, it's an ACL injury or something like that, like, would that be out there pretty quickly? Because we've seen that before with a lot of people. Yesterday that happened with a Browns player at camp, an Achilles, right? Like, that, we've seen that where it gets out there as quick as possible. Someone knows, they say it, and, you know, the Bills, and we find out Bills are bringing in another guy to work out or something like that. But you could also go, and if you don't hear anything, it's because, okay, they're still doing tests, or it's just a injury like a lot of guys, and we'll find out how long he's out for when we talk to Sean McDermott or whoever we see and get a word from on Thursday. It could be the other way, which is because you haven't heard anything yet, they're getting second opinions. They're getting another test. They don't want to put anything out there yet until they absolutely know for sure, so no one knows. Or I just, again, this goes back to all of us kind of figuring out and going back and thinking how it could go. I've seen it go this way a number of different ways all the time. You know, if you just think back to injuries, nothing even specific. There's been times where guys got hurt. I don't know. When did we find out Reggie Ragland was going to be out for the year? Right. I mean, I think about him. I think it was a couple days later, actually, to be honest with you. What about Tyrell Shavers going off the field on a cart with everyone really concerned, and it looked really bad? And then he's, okay, he's going to be fine. He's coming back to practice in a couple days, right? You just never know with these things.
Yeah, I looked up in the first hour, Sal, that it was 13 days after Vaughn got hurt on Thanksgiving before it was officially announced that he had torn his ACL. Like, there was a back and forth, remember, like, of whether, yes, like, we had to wait for the swelling to go down. And maybe that's rarer than the alternative, which is finding out quicker. But what does that mean? It means really we have no idea when we could find out.
No, that's right. And I do wonder, Joe, because it's training camp versus regular season, a lot of things like that come into play, right, where you're at in your season, everybody being together, there's games to prepare for. And the initial diagnosis on, excuse me, on Vaughn was that, as you said, swelling gone down, but he had said that it was intact or something. There was something like that. Yeah. And then it came out from Sean McDermott, like a week later, or a week and a half later, that it happened. So I've seen this go different ways, different times, and I think we just have to wait until we know something and hear something.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, we have a little shorter segment with you here today. Outside of the Maxwell Harrison injury, other news, notes, things to recap from yesterday's workouts at St. John Fisher.
Well, I mean, first of all, with Max Harrison out, you ought to immediately go to, okay, Tre'Davious White is the guy right there, and he's been the guy. And you know, I've said before camp started, I thought Tre'Davious would be the number one guy until Max Harrison can snatch that job from him, and he's going to have to outplay him. Not that Tre'Davious would lose it necessarily, but Max has to win it. Well, whether Max Harrison's out anything long-term or even short-term, any out at all for a rookie is not good. Look at Cole Bishop last year and the time that he missed. So now Tre'Davious White, I think, is kind of entrenched right there. And I got to tell you guys, I thought he was the best player in the field yesterday. Tre'Davious White, I thought, was fantastic yesterday. I mean, he had a couple of one-on-one reps in the end zone where he locked up Josh Palmer in the back, then he locked up Keon Coleman in the front, and then later in 11-on-11, he was about maybe a half step in trail coverage behind Palmer. Great ball fit in, and it was going to be a catch, a nice catch for Palmer on the sidelines, and Trey just timed it perfectly, used his length, knocked it away, and him and Benford went, yeah, did the flying around, arms out kind of thing, going around the field. Like, it was a fantastic play. I mean, they're going to need that. But now you got to look at guys like Dorian Strong, who had a really good start to camp. I think since pads have come on, he's been kind of a little bit more up and down. You look at Dane Jackson, who I think they know that they can put him in at a pinch. He can do the job. So, you know, like, now you're going to have to start looking at what you have at that spot with Max Harrison's, you know, injury in question and where they may go from here.
Do you feel like they could add somebody? Do you think, as long as maybe Dorian Strong is showing them well, and they did, of course, they have other veterans, Dane Jackson, that you might predict that they don't add anybody? Like, of significance, I would say.
They could, Joe, but I think that they have enough here. I mean, you've even gone to Daquan Hardy, to Corey Couch. These are guys who were here last year. They know the system, right? Jamarcus Ingram is on this team still. Let's remember that. So they could. I think that they probably... You know, when you say significance, it's funny. We just recorded It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, Matt Bove and I, last night. Matt brought up Rasul Douglas to me, and I'd like everybody to kind of go listen to our discussion on that. I'll just give you a tease. It's something I don't think they would visit right now or do. I think you roll in, you still go with what you have right here for a while. But we'll see. We'll see what they do. If they bring somebody in, then that's obviously a sign that, you know, Max is at least going to miss some time. If they don't, it doesn't mean he's not. It just means that, you know, they like what they have, you know, right now in the fold. So we'll see. The other story real quick, guys, is obviously other injuries mounting up. So wrote about it at WGR550.com. The injuries from yesterday, the guys who sat out yesterday, and though the return of Dalton Kincaid and Elijah Moore, which is good news.
All right. And Cole Bishop and Ty Johnson left at one point, but both came back.
They did. There's some question about exactly how much they did. I told Matt, I thought I saw Cole on the final defensive series for the Bills. But he said he didn't see him. So, you know, we have to wash that out, but they did come back. I don't know how much they did necessarily. And I don't think Ty Johnson took another rep after he came back, but he did come back out and was on the sidelines.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Sal Capaccio, he's got the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show coming up at 10 o'clock today. So stay tuned for that. The Bills are off from St. John Fisher and we are back here in Buffalo. So other things we saw yesterday, Steven Gossner touchdown, Deion Kane touchdown.
Wearing number 32.
Yes, 32. And I looked at where my whole family was at camp yesterday. There's a big touchdown. And, 32. Who's 32? Hold on. Pulled up the Bills roster. Not listed.
Not listed.
At the time.
Just a random fan jumped out of the and just like won a contest to catch from Josh Allen.
Yeah. It was, man, it's hot. It was so hot at training camp yesterday. I mean, temperatures in the 90s. It reached 90 in Buffalo, and I think Rochester's a little hotter than Buffalo. It was very, very warm there yesterday. So,
does that track make it hotter, too, when you're standing on the track? Because the media is standing on the track.
I think it does. The track does make it hotter, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're back out there tomorrow, and then the blue and red is going to be Friday at the stadium, and we're into the preseason. Next Saturday is preseason game against the Bears.
Friday, blue and red. What helmet is Josh Allen going to wear? I think I said this last week, maybe.
You know what?
Or maybe I just thought it. That would have been a perfect opportunity to release like the rivalry series helmet, is him walking onto the field with it.
But they're not in control of that. Right. I bet on Friday he wears just the red helmet. Now they're actually going to wear it. And won't that drum up interest? Won't that kind of be a perfect little...
He's done that, though.
No, not the one they're going to wear.
No, I mean, he's worn a red helmet that has like two blue stripes on the top and looks a little weird on the top of it.
I would just wear the red helmet.
He's done blue.
Yeah.
He's done red. He has not done Zubas. He has not done...
Oh, a Zubas helmet. I'd be into that.
He has not done his drawing of a logo on a helmet.
Now that is what, yes. They're putting that on hats, right?
Yeah,
the new partnership with New Era.
I mean, he's invested now in New Era, I think. So, like,
let's make that a helmet.
I think he would the potato be buffalo to do that.
Potato buffalo helmet is the right answer on what he should wear
on Friday.
On Friday, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with that. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Have a bunch of answers. I'll get to some of these answers here. And I think there's a pretty consistent number one answer or a favorite here on, you know, the Hairston scare. We'll see where it goes. It kind of begs the question, which newcomer, that's draft or free agency, which newcomer is most important to their success this year? And have a lot of responses to this, and I'm pretty sure there is a, there's definitely not a consensus number one, but there is a number one name that of the 20 mm-hmm. responses I have so far on the chat, in the Twitter post, there's a number one answer.
Mm-hmm.
Care to guess?
Bosa.
It's Bosa.
Yeah.
Bosa is the one that people think is the most important to their success this year. And in talking with Bobby Babich about Bosa yesterday, man, the plan they have for him, it sounds like, you know, we don't get to see how written out that is and how much the training staff is going to be in there. Like, is the training staff given the right to, they're going to monitor his snaps and then they get to mm-hmm. pull and say, like, you can't use him now. Mm-hmm. Make sure he's healthy. It's been about health. You know,
right.
Babich told the story yesterday of Bosa being here in Allen's rookie year and being mic'd up for whatever, NFL films.
Yep.
And he had a big day that day, and he sacked Josh, and he runs off the field screaming, I'm a beast. So, like, you get the impression that Babich has been a fan of his for a while, as many would be. If he's healthy and if he can make a difference, you know, a closer pass rusher – that makes those big plays and big moments. Like, what you want is what Vaughn gave you for the first 10 games of the Vaughn contract.
Right.
You might even settle for 75% of that and say it's a big win.
I think I would. I mean, give me the individual plays at the end. Vaughn closes the Bills-Chiefs win that year in the regular season. He chases, Allen throws a touchdown to Knox, and then Vaughn chases Mahomes out of the pocket and forces him into a bad pick. And the game's over.
He had a strip sack in New York. That's a game I think they lose to the Jets, but Vaughn gave them multiple chances to win the game again.
Yeah.
He had third down. He didn't just have the pressure on Mahomes. He had a third down sack on, I think, the previous drive.
He had a sack against Minnesota that really should have been a closing sack.
Fourth and 18?
I think it's third and 10. He sacks Cousins to put them at fourth and 18. And then Jefferson makes, you know, that catch. But that's another game that he really should have been a closing play for him, and they don't have that. They don't have that and have not had that. So if Bosa can even just be that, a closer, when you need a defensive stop at the end, or how about even just a freak play to get the ball back for your team? 2 years in a row, the Bills, I know their odds of winning in these situations would not be very high, but 2 years in a row, after Bass misses a field goal, after Kincaid drops it on fourth down, the Bills still could make a stop against Kansas City to get the ball back one more time.
Right.
Like, that's forgotten.
It is desperation time. But right
and but if you stop them and you go three and out, then you get the ball back with a minute to play and you're still in the football game.
Mm-hmm.
And both times, it wasn't even difficult at all. Kansas City gets right down there. And they threw it. Like last year to close that game, I think it's a play-action pass. They throw it. And if you can give me a stud pass rusher that reads that play and launches in on Mahomes and forces him into either an incompletion or a mistake, then those are situations you could get the ball back. But it's more about, I think, closing it when you have the lead.
Yeah.
That's what you really want Bosa to be. And if he can be that, if he can be what Vaughn was in those first 8 weeks, I think it would be tough for anybody to beat him out as the best acquisition they made. Like, yeah. What would Josh Palmer have to do to beat that? Like, you'd have to be like a 1,200-yard receiver, maybe, to feel like Bosa, a double-digit sack guy that's closing games. It's more valuable than that.
To your point about the end of that game, the Chiefs get the ball back after Kincaid is unable to make that catch.
Yep.
They have 1 minute and 54 seconds left, and the Bills have all three timeouts.
And they're only down three.
Yeah. And the first play is a one-yard run. The second play, it's second and nine.
Yeah.
Pass to Pacheco for 10.
Like, yeah.
First down.
And that's basically game there.
No. They still
needed, they have it because there's two timeouts.
They still needed one more.
Because they got
and
it
in
too
fact,
quick.
The Chiefs get into 3rd and 9 at the Bills' 35.
Now, how much time?
1:35.
Okay.
A stop there, and you have the ball back with them.
50 seconds?
Yeah.
40 seconds?
Yeah. And it's pass short left to Samaje Perine. Like, mm-hmm. You had a 2nd and 9 and a 3rd and 9 that they were able to convert for first downs. So, right, I know we could sit here and say that play, but right. The defense did have a chance to get it back one more time,
right.
And you know the Chiefs just closed that out. 803-0550, our phone number, 1-888-550-2550. Howard Simon's checking in at 8 o'clock. We'll also continue to take your calls on which newcomer is the most important for this season. Hairston, we're waiting to find out. Bosa, of course. Josh Palmer, a lot of good names, and a lot of newcomers. I mean, and there's some we're not going to see until week 7, Hoyt, Ogunjobi, and we'll see about Hairston. 803-0550, the phone number, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe, and you on the phone lines if you'd like to join us here on WGR.
He's very competitive. You see whenever we do one-on-ones or whenever we do team drills or 7-on-7, he's always the first one there to congratulate guys or talk trash to the defense, or he's always talking about how he hates to lose. But also understanding that we are installing an offense. So, of course, you know, some things are going to be scripted for the defense. Some things are going to be scripted for us. So it's not getting too concerned with the loss, if there is a loss, because it's, you know, it's easy to play defense when you know what the play is.
Bills receiver Josh Palmer on Joe Brady and some of his traits and philosophy. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. We are live back in Amherst today. Back out at St. John Fisher tomorrow for another day of training camp. It's been a good, sunny, hot week of camp. It's going to be sunny and hot here today.
Mm-hmm.
There's an earthquake off the coast of Russia that has tsunami alerts on the West Coast and all that.
It's an 8.8 earthquake, which I read was the 6th largest earthquake since they've been recording earthquakes. Mm.
And so tsunami alarms are on, but I don't exactly know the science and the... I'm going to go with a phrase here, wavology.
Yeah,
it's got a whole ocean to go across. It feels like it might dissipate somewhat.
By the time Northern California would see anything, Hawaii's, I know, lowered it to an advisory, tsunami advisory at this point. I was wondering about like the same thing. Like, I don't know how that works, because when you see it on a map, it's a very unpopulated area in Russia, but like Japan is right there.
Yeah.
But maybe it's too close almost for the tsunami to be big. I'm not sure.
Yeah, big story today, though. We're, of course, talking Bills training camp, talking Maxwell Hairston, and just kind of waiting to see if there's any sort of update on that. Hall of Fame game is tomorrow, and that's Chargers and Lions. Bills have their blue and red scrimmage coming up on Friday from the stadium. If you're getting to the stadium, you'll get a look at the new Highmark and how that thing continues to come together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. And... you give us a ring, 803-0550. Josh Palmer, one of the answers we're getting quite a bit on which Bills newcomer is the most important to their success this year. Hairston on the short list. A lot of answers for Bosa, a lot of answers for Josh Palmer as well. So, there you go. Give us a ring if you'd like to, 803-0550. Curtis Samuel, it's funny, like we're here again with Samuel not on the field. Last year it was turf toe.
Yep.
And this year it's hamstring.
Yep. Listen, that was part of the risk in signing him.
Yeah.
This was not new. It's kind of the Bosa thing a little bit, too. Is that a newer trend, the Bills signing guys that have a bit of an injury history, or is that just maybe it's only those two guys?
Maybe.
Because Samuel was a guy with soft tissue injuries over the course of his career before he even got to the Bills.
Isn't this what you do when you kind of have to spend limited money? You buy things that you hope hold together,
right?
That have that. Why is Curtis Samuel a $9 million receiver instead of a 14? It's probably because injuries. Why is Bosa a $12 million defensive end instead of 18?
Oh, him especially.
It's got to be the fear of the health.
Yeah, Samuel in his career, 2 games missed with a hamstring sprain, 1 game with a back sprain, 6 with an ankle fracture, 1 with a knee patella sprain, 3 with a groin strain, 5 another groin strain, 4 with a hamstring strain.
And none of this is with the
Bills.
Yeah.
1 with a toe sprain. Last year, like, that's all before the Bills. Like, right there is the cutoff. Yeah. So,
and then last year it's turf toe.
And last year it's turf toe, which he actually doesn't – I don't think he misses any games, though. Does he?
He certainly doesn't get a lot of work early on trying to come back from that.
That's why. He plays 14 games. But, right, like, how many of those is he actually healthy for? I mean, after the bye week, I remember them finally talking about, like, he's starting to finally feel right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he'll ever get there.
He had 31 catches last year, which is actually – it was – you know, they signed him. He's a guy that caught 62 the year before. And
right. With Washington.
Right. Yep. And the idea was
– 60-plus each of the last two seasons.
Think about this for Josh Palmer. Like, the Samuel thing – you know, if the Bills had gotten the Curtis Samuel they thought they were going to get and a healthy Keon Coleman, and, you know, we might have been feeling pretty good about that. And instead, Mac Hollins steps in because, well, Coleman got hurt for a little bit of time there and because Samuel was just never on the field.
Do you think about, though, the plays he was involved in?
Samuel?
Like, the way he was involved? Didn't they look more like Shakir plays?
Yeah.
And, like, I wonder if Shakir has the year he does. If Samuel has no injury problem last year and it works the way they had foreseen it, does that actually take away from, like, a Mac Hollins, or does Shakir have a bit more of a pedestrian season?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know.
Samuel, it's funny. Like, we think about the end of the season is when he finally started to come on. He was inactive for 2 weeks late in the season. And when they started, right, like, if you're looking for depth of target, in Washington, he was a down-the-field intermediate kind of guy.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Yep.
And for the Bills, like, his stat line before – geez, I'm trying to look where I should do a cutoff here. Before he misses his first game, because he's got turf tone. He plays through it. He gets 2 for 15, 1 for 3, 3 for 22, 2 for 8, 1 for 0.
Nothing.
Yeah. 3 for 44. That's, like, the first time he goes over 10 yards per reception. And then it's back to – 4 for 35, 5 for 58, 2 for 15, 1 for 1.
Mm-hmm.
In the playoffs is where it ticked up, 3 for 68. He had one big catch against Denver.
Yep.
Baltimore, 2 for 9. Kansas City, 1 for 4. These are receptions for yards. One catch for 4 yards. Two catches for 9 yards.
That's the playoff game against the Chiefs?
The Chiefs.
I think he scored a touchdown in both Chiefs games last year.
He did. He scored a touchdown against Denver and a touchdown against the Chiefs in the playoffs. So, yeah, maybe they've never been able to get it off the ground because he's never been healthy long enough. You know, he misses he misses time in camp and then plays 7 games, misses week 8 and then plays 6 games, misses weeks 15 and 16,
mm-hmm.
or 16 and 17 rather, and then comes back for the playoffs.
Right.
So I don't know what to make of that. That's where you're hoping Palmer can be what they hope, because Samuel definitely has not done what they wanted. And whether that's because he's injured.
No, it doesn't feel like he's on track to either.
No.
Right? What do they want? They want him probably to be a yak guy and a guy that can get open.
Yeah. And really what we saw were like 2 games where you saw that he can bring some pop to your offense. Rushing attempts, that's the other part of this too. Like, running the ball, one thing you pointed out was, didn't he run it a lot when he was with Joe Brady in Carolina?
I think the year in Carolina was his most rushing attempts.
Yeah. And do you know how many rushing attempts he had last year?
Can I count it on one hand?
You can. It's 5.
Yeah.
5 for 14 yards.
Yeah, I think the Brady year in Carolina, he had 41 carries for 200 yards.
Yeah, we kind of thought he'd be this, you know, Swiss Army knife, and whether it's injuries that derailed it or they just kind of found other things that they like. And here he is with a hamstring issue again, so hopefully that can get, you know.
Well, they probably didn't want to use him in the backfield, because if he can't stay healthy, you're going to put him back at running back. Like, just get him a receiver at that point.
803-0550, which newcomer is most important to the Bills this season? If you want to give us a ring on that, you can. Trey Hendrickson is back at camp for the Bengals. By the way, where's Adam Schefter to detail the route he takes back from Jacksonville to Cincinnati?
I believe he did tweet out that he's flying.
Oh,
so we know
he drove there.
We know the way he's getting there.
That's because he wants the fines to stop faster. You got to fly back.
He said plans to report today. I could have swore I saw him detailing that he's flying back. Maybe somebody else did that. But he's not driving. I don't think he's driving. Although if he drove there and he's flying back.
He's leaving his car?
Or maybe he took a rental?
But he's about to start holding in.
Yeah, that seems to be what's about to happen here. Because if they're no closer to a deal, and the owner did not sound like he's ready to, you know, come all the way over to Hendrickson's side on what he wants. I don't know. Still don't feel like it's that strong a chance that he starts the season, but feels like this is a different one than all these other holdouts. That this is the one where it's happened long enough, it's the right organization, the players earned it, the owner, the way he's spoken, that I'd still want to bet this is the one where a guy could actually miss games, even though he's going there.
803-0550. Howard's coming up. He'll join us at 8 o'clock. Do you want a quick fantasy football question that I think people will find an interesting answer on and will lead to a conversation after?
Definitely.
The NFL.com, Michelle Madzouk, has listed the top 10 wide receiver values in fantasy football.
Okay.
Basically, where it's draft season, so ADP's happening, where guys are getting drafted, we can kind of slot in where the football the fantasy football playing universe is drafting receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Who is her number one value receiver based on where he's going in fantasy drafts and how good this player is?
Okay. Is this going to be – how about, like, is Ladd McConkey possible here?
I mean, a lot of these answers
are – is it lower on the list?
A lot of these answers are possible. These are top 10.
Like, is this a guy that's further down in drafts? Because McConkey's like a second-round pick.
The list spans from guys drafted in the eighth round
to the top of the draft.
To the rounds one and two.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, McConkey would be my number one guess.
Not in the top 10.
Not in the top 10?
Nope.
What about, like, Jacoby Myers?
Number 10.
Yeah.
She has Jacoby Myers as,
I like him a lot,
you know, wide receiver 42, but he's going to be a number one for them.
Yeah, let me whisper that. I like him a lot this year.
Okay.
Gino chucks it around.
No, Bill makes this list. As,
no.
Again, it's just these receivers are being drafted later than they should, and her number one receiver for this.
What about Rashi Rice?
No.
What about Mike Evans?
No.
Not on the list at all?
Not on the list at all.
This is just wide receivers. Tyreek Hill?
Yes.
Is he?
She has Tyreek Hill
number one
as the number one
really
value in fantasy football at wide receiver.
I don't know about that.
Because he's going in the third round. Wide receiver 12.
There's a reason he's going
in
the third round, though.
He was regularly a top three pick 1 year ago.
That's right. That's right.
And now he's wide receiver 12. And
He was a top three pick that played every game and didn't get to 1,000 yards.
Yep.
So, like,
people are disappointed. Played through a wrist injury all season. Went through a pair of procedures for that this offseason.
Well, what's more likely? He's going to have last season, or he's going to have the year he had 2 years ago?
Well,
because last year he had less than 1,000 yards. The year before he had 1,800.
All right. He was wide receiver 2 in 2023 and wide receiver 3 in 2022. And last year felt like it was the end of the Tyreek Hill era. I mean, 2 years ago, he was named the number one player by the NFL players.
Yeah.
The number one player in the league.
Yep.
And last year felt like he kind of disappeared.
And but in part, why did that happen? Was he, maybe he was dealing with an injury, too.
Wrist injury. Of course, Tua was out for a while.
But even the Tua games, I remember looking up the game logs on that. That was not, like, the reason. He, in the Tua games, I think he had gone, like, 11, 12, 13 games in a row without getting to 100 yards. There was some streak like that that I'll have to find.
One of the stories on him was he had an 80-yard touchdown week one.
Yeah.
And then he never had another catch over 30 yards.
Yeah, he had. So in that first game, he had 130 yards, and a lot of it was the 80-yard catch. He didn't have 100 yards in a game again until week 14.
Yeah.
And it took overtime to do it against the Jets. So, like, it's their offense for me. Like, they have to get rid of the ball so fast, and last year, what did that end up resulting in? We actually talked to Marcel Louis-Jacques about this earlier in the offseason, that they thought they had to kind of be this slow-playing, little slower tempo type of offense, which is why Jonnu Smith ends up leading them in catches. And if they are going to be like that again, then they're not chucking the ball around down the field to Tyreek Hill. They're going to be throwing the ball short again and going on these long, sustaining drives.
Well, there's a story today in Miami that the mission for them is to be more physical. They want to be a physical run team.
They maybe
not have built that, but that's what they want.
That's not me wanting to draft Tyreek Hill any earlier, I'll tell you that, if that's their game plan.
803-0550. Howard joins us coming up at 8 o'clock, and you can give us a ring. 803-0550 here on WGR.
All right, we're The bullpen.
We're going to check in on the bullpen slash the chat. We have new people in the chat. A lot of new subscribers on YouTube and viewers on YouTube. Welcome. Thanks for having us. We're not at training camp today. That's how people are kind of finding out. You know, when we're at camp, you're watching, you're seeing our interviews. Tomorrow, we expect to chat with Bills special teams coach Chris Tabor and Sean McDermott maybe next week. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that. But, you know, every once in a while we see what's going on in the chat.
Yeah.
I got one here. I was going to try and see where people are watching and listening, streaming from. We've got Fort Worth, Austin,
mm-hmm.
Chicago, Pittsburgh, Abbott Road, Georgia.
Nice.
I think we're big in Texas. Galveston. Yeah, here's Galveston.
Big in Texas.
I think it's Steve that wrote in from Galveston.
Okay.
Second hole in one yesterday. You guys talked about the first one on the air in 2020.
Nice.
So 110 yards over water into 50-mile-an-hour wind. Pitching wedge. Nice work. Congratulations. You can join us in the chat. You can write to us. We actually write back during the show as well sometimes. And, yeah.
Question. Would you rather have your member guest victory at Transit Valley from last weekend or a hole-in-one? Which you do not have?
I do not have a hole-in-one. I mean,
member guest or hole-in-one? What would you rather have?
I think I'd rather have the hole-in-one. No. I'd rather have the member guest. The hole-in-one would be nice to have, but isn't that just like a moment?
It's a moment.
In a moment.
And a lot of people have that moment.
And a lot of people have them accidentally. A lot
What do you mean?
Like, bladed it off the bottom, hit a tree, and it went in.
Yeah.
Or
I had one of those yesterday where I thinned a 9-iron. It was like 4 feet from the hole. It was that's by accident.
Yeah. Hole in one's a lot of skill, but there's also going to be some luck involved. I mean,
yeah.
So
and there's not.
Although there was definitely that in the member guest win, some luck involved as well. But like, still,
you might be the only person I know that has a member guest win. Like that's rare.
Yeah.
That hole is in
one odds range from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how many people have one?
Wait, 1 in 100,000 what? Shots?
Like, yeah, it's not one out of every 100,000 golfers.
Like 50.
No, this is like for you. Every 100,000 shots, there's a one.
Okay,
like, chance.
That's not right. It's not 100,000 shots.
Well, will you hit 100,000 shots in your life anyway?
Out of the sand, maybe. it takes me a lot to get.
Because if
sand.
You will, then you're probably gonna get a hole. Like no, odds would tell you, you have a very good chance of getting a hole in one.
100,000 shots for golfers to get a hole in one.
Well, it says this is that's the high end. It's usually like 1 in 10.
What's the high end?
1 in 10,000 to 1 in 100,000.
All right. What percentage
that's
of golfers?
That's 100. Well, it's more than 100.
What percentage of golfers have a hole in one? 25%.
That's the right number we need.
Is it 25%?
No, it's higher than that. I bet.
I don't know. 40, I feel like 40%. It might be 10%. Not 40.
40. For like right. Relatively good golfers, it's probably like 40%.
Four people here. Do you have one?
No.
Me? No. Josh? No. Nope. Owen? That's a zero.
Well, the next room over, maybe it's 5 for 5.
Get Brian Mazurowski.
Yeah, okay,
Susan
high.
Rose.
Maybe 40's high.
I mean,
but
it's definitely...
like 1% for member guest wins, I think.
This other one I just found says 1% to 2% of golfers have a hole-in-one each year.
Oh, look at that. These guys. These people with their every year.
Yeah.
Leave some for the rest of us.
Well, no. Like, out of every golfer in a year, 1% to 2% of them
okay.
will. Like, so then, every single golfer in the world, 1% to 2% of those golfers will hit a hole-in-one this year, and then next year, a different 1% to 2%.
Someone do the
but
math
how many
on
golfers
that.
Actually have hole-in-ones?
That's the one thing I can't find. Nobody has that number.
Hmm. 40% was
not
an,
even
was,
like odds.
40% was an aggressive guess.
You know.
It's 10%. It's 5%.
It couldn't be 40%?
No, it can't be 40%. Then it wouldn't be rare.
There's a lot of good golfers. It depends what you're putting the qualifier at. Golfers at least as good as you. How many have a hole-in-one? That might be 40%.
There's a PGA pro, Robert Allenby, that has 10.
Look at this obnoxious Robert Allenby fellow.
When you get the 10th one, is it like just like it's like making a par at that point? Like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
You're not jumping in the lake after the 10th hole-in-one.
No, I don't think so. 803-0550, our phone number. Happy golf season.
Phil Mickelson says he has 47 hole-in-ones.
I'm going to get out of here, Phil. 47.
How many do you think Tiger has?
How many member guests does Phil have, huh? Probably a lot.
He probably could have as many as he wanted if he just showed up.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods has 20.
Okay.
20 on the tour. No, sorry. He has 20 in his life. 3 have occurred on the PGA Tour.
Howard Simon is here. Talk some Bills with us. Yeah, yeah. He's looking at the lights. Look at this. We're lit.
Yeah.
We are lit up on camera. Yeah, they want to see our faces, Howard. It's very important, everybody, that we look good. Howard's here. So, yeah. I've decided, by the way, I'm not going to make you pick the Bills. I'm going to leave it up to you if you want to do it.
See ya.
No, you still have to hang out with us.
Oh.
But whether or not you want to pick the Bills, we can wait till after a preseason game.
Wow.
I'm going to leave it up to you.
I love you.
I'm in a friendly mood. I've had a good week. And it's been hot. Jeremy and Joe, Howard's going to join us next. We'll talk a little about the Bills. You know, their most important newcomer. Who is it? You can give us a ring. We'll get Howard's thoughts on that as well. Talk a little on Max Hairston's importance and see if we get any news from him past his Instagram post. You can give us a ring here on WGR.